so let's get started with today's study session. We're going to be looking at property tax and public works budget, discussing that, and later on have some interviews for one of our commissions. So who's giving us the presentation? Is that Mr. Heverly?
Yes, it'll be, I'm going to be doing the property tax presentation, so thank you, council members, and I should be here tonight, Dan Heverly, finance director. So this will be a quick presentation on property tax, very similar to last year. So that's the 2022 total levy, $1,342,488 approximately. And we're proposing to do a 1% increase over 2022. So that would be $13,425 approximately. And then add it to the 2022 amount, the proposed 2023 total levy would be $1,355,913 approximately.
Could you back up to the slide before that?
So yeah, we have on there the 2022 levy, and then we have the 1% increase over 2022, and then we add that, and that comes up with the 2023 total levy proposed.
Would be 13,424. Okay. See?
Yeah, 1,342,488, and then the 1% is $1,424.88.
So the 1% increase only gets us $13,000 more?
Yep, $13,000 more.
Yeah. Do you have any bank capacity right now?
Last year we did. It was, well, we had a refunded levy that was like $1,500. I'm not sure about on this year. I think we do have some bank that we could tap into.
Because we're allowed to raise it like a percent every year, but in years we don't, we can come back later and raise it that 1%. So
I'll have to look on that. I'm not sure on the bank capacity on how much we had left, but I think there was some if we wanted.
There's support of council here. I mean, $13,000 isn't going to, that's going to buy us a stop sign or something.
And last year we raised it 1% also. It was $12,000.
So what does that mean for the average homeowner?
So it's about $3.50 per year.
Per year.
That's a raise of 1% on what the city of Blaine gets.
Correct. It's not 1% on each homeowner. It's 1% on the total levy that city of Blaine gets. This is my second year doing the property tax stuff. So it's, as a senior accountant in the city of Bellingham, we didn't do as much. The finance director did this, so now I'm learning more about it. Once you get your 1% rate, there are other amounts that they allow you to get on top of that, and it's different than the bank capacity. So there's other calculations that they do. This piece is just the piece that council has to deal with.
Yeah.
So like last year, it was like 1 million. I'm going off the top of my head. It was like 1.25, something like that. And then we increased it by 12,000. But then they did have these extra amounts that we were allowed to put in it, and it was an extra like 50-some thousand.
Yeah, this is what I was going to say, because we've got something like, what, 4,000 property tax accounts in the city of Blaine?
Approximately, yeah.
So when you, and they're not all proportional, because some of them are totally chocolate and Nature's Path and stuff like that, and they're paying a significantly higher percentage of the property tax than an average single family home. I think that the circumstances are dire. There might be enough support on council to, you know, go 2% or something if we have a leftover percent from a previous.
Well, what I can do is, so the piece that we can definitely vote on is the 1%. And then what I can do is, like last year when they said, well, you have these extra amounts that can be used, they allowed us to put, that was added into there, and then it went up to this 1.3 million. So there are extra calculations that they do that doesn't have to be voted on by council. They just put it in there in the property tax.
Richard, you're talking about some of that banked funds.
Yeah, he's saying
this year, like to vote on it this year, or wait until after the first of the year and kind of see where all settles out.
No, I'm saying as soon as we can possibly do it. If there was, you know, like if in 2017 or something, we didn't use the 1% we were allowed to use, and we're allowed to slingshot that to now and increase this by 2% instead of 1%. I'd like to see if we have enough members of council that are in favor of that to do it, so that this 13,000 figure is more like a 30,000 figure.
Yeah, there's, so last year was, it was like about a $50,000 increase, and that wasn't, that mean, did not need to be voted on by council. The 1% was voted on. And then, like I was saying, there's these extra amounts that they allow you to put in there that that is not up to a vote.
So you're saying council doesn't have to approve access bank capacity?
Bank capacity, yes.
Well,
yes.
That's the subject I'm...
I'll look and see if that is there, if it's available. Then I'll bring it to you before we actually vote.
Thank you very much.
Because tonight we'll have a hearing on this 1%.
Yep.
So we're gonna look at bank capacity, how much we've had for the last however many X years, because I don't think
it'll just tell you if we have any bank capacity there and how much.
Yeah, I'm sure we do. And it's not just 1%, right?
Like I'm gonna look.
But we could potentially have bank capacity for the past X number of years.
Possibly.
Right? Well, we might have 6 or 7% lying around available.
I'll look and see if we have any, but there is a max amount that they, and sure. I believe that includes the bank, that they won't let you go above that.
And you said 1% is approximately $3 a year?
About $3.50 per year per house.
Okay.
And because again, with 4,000 tax accounts and around $13,000 there, you divide that by basically by a third of that.
Right.
And then you'll let us know what the other.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'll check on the survey, sit down and see if there is any bank capacity that we could tap.
No, not just the bank capacity, but the whatever add-ons you had been.
Yeah, they have all sorts of formulas that they showed me last year, and they're like, well, after you do the 1%, then we have all these other things we put into it, and it made $1.3 million. But the piece that I brought to you to vote on last year is $1.245 million. So there is a bunch of extra things that it has nothing to do with this 1% that they put into the calculation of the total levy.
And so, so this number, this 2023 number, is based on the 2022 number plus the 1%.
Right, the 2022 total levy, which was the $1,300,000.
Feeling like there was going to be no change in the property tax collect other than the 1%.
Say again?
This number is essentially the same plus 1%.
Yes.
And that is essentially saying we don't feel like there's going to be any more extra property tax to be collected this year.
Unless we have some bank capacity that we can tap into.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Other than that, we're only allowed to get this 1% plus bank capacity. And then they do, including that bank capacity, they have on the formula, the sheet, like a max amount you can get, and that's it.
Okay. And that's based off the latest assessment from the property tax.
They provide all that.
Percentage-wise, how many residents in the city had the county take a look and reassess their property?
That I don't know. You mean how many people have been reassessed?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that I don't know that.
My understanding was that everybody's kind of on a 3-year rolling.
That's what, yeah.
And they do X amount every single year within the city. I just didn't know how many people were reassessed.
I could see if they have that amount, but I don't, they didn't provide me that in any of the data they sent me. So that's the proposed 2023 total levy is $1,355,913. And then there's just a note there that as we get future growth, obviously that's going to grow as East Blaine is built up. And that's what I'll present tonight at the public hearing. Last year, no one commented on it, so I'm not sure this year if we'll have anyone comment. But and then in 2 weeks, you'll actually vote on it. There'll be, I think another chance. No, this is the only public hearing, and then in 2 weeks, you'll actually vote on it, on the property tax. But tonight, there's no vote on it. Any questions on property tax? And I'll check as soon as I sit down about if we have bank capacity.
And what percentage of this property tax makes up the general fund? Like, how much of our general fund?
So total general fund revenue is about $7.7 million. So this is, it's about... little under 10%, or little over, sorry, 10% would be 770,000. So it's about 14% of the general fund revenue.
So just as we're in between, to answer your question, and the reason it popped up in my mind as far as reassessment is I got my reassessment this year. And it looks like it's broken up into areas.
Yeah.
Area one is Blaine, area two is Ferndale Linden, area three is further out the county, and then so on, six areas. And it looks like area one, which is us, was reassessed 2022. So this year. So potentially that number is going to be different based on reassessment. I'm comfortable with this number based on not. And then if we have a windfall, then we just figure it out from there. So, but that's to answer your question. Most likely everybody in this room had their house reassessed this year.
Yeah, they work through one little part of the county at a time until it cycles through and the whole county's been done.
So now we're going to go over the Public Works Street and Enterprise Funds budget. So this is the very first workshop. And then after this, we'll have another workshop in about 2 weeks that'll go over a general fund. And that time you'll see numbers. That'll be on November 7th. So we'll actually drill into the data of the general fund numbers. Then November 14th, we'll go back to Public Works again, the same exact presentation, but you'll see the numbers, the detailed numbers. So first, introduction to the budget. This one is going to be less painful than the general fund. There are still some areas that are of concern, and it's been the same thing every year. Street fund is an area that we do need to keep an eye on. Water fund is another one that we do need to keep an eye on and make sure it's staying healthy. All the rest of them are doing fairly well. So operating revenues, there's some that are falling behind, and we'll talk about that in a bit, the street fund in particular. But the rest of them, we did have rate increases in them that help increase the revenue. So all enterprise fund expense changes, we do have some extra new positions that we're proposing for this. So it's different with general fund where we weren't proposing anything new. So this one, we are proposing some new positions that will help those different funds, and Gary will talk about that. Rate increases that are built into this. So we have built in here water fund, a 17.5% increase, which was recommended last year by the consultant. The other funds, sewer, electric, surface, and stormwater, we have built in an 8% increase. So that is essentially to keep up with inflation, because inflation is about 9%. So 8% is what we're proposing for sewer, surface and stormwater, and electric. Now, the consultant proposed, I believe, is 5% for sewer. However, that was prior to all the inflation now that has really gone up. In general, you do want to keep up with inflation. You know, if at the point that they did that study, we didn't know what the inflation was going to be this year. So at least you want to be maintaining inflation when you look at rate increases. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through all these and just talk about the revenue pieces of them, and then I'll go back to street fund and Gary will talk about the expenses. So like I was saying in street fund, the one problem we have there is, and it's been continuous every year, street fund definitely needs to be, it has to have transfers coming in from REIT and or general fund, or it has issues. And the piece there where I'm saying revenues are falling short of projections, that's gas tax. Gas tax is unfortunately not doing very well. So it's falling well short of budget. Last year when we projected gas tax, we were thinking once the border opened up, everyone would be stopping here and getting gas. However, that just doesn't seem to be happening. It seems like people are passing up Blaine and possibly getting gas near the Silver Reef Casino where it's much cheaper.
How much data have you got since October 14 when the border rules significantly changed?
Not a whole lot. I thought it would dramatically increase, but currently gas tax revenues for this year is about $50,000.
But if you look at the differences between September and the time since the middle of October when they changed the board rules.
I mean, it did increase, I think, by like $7,000 to $8,000 for the month. Don't quote me on that, because I don't. But there was an increase. It did go up with the border opening, but it didn't go up as much as I was hoping. So it is increasing, and hopefully we'll see it continue to increase. That possibly there's a bit of a lag with it. But I will be keeping my eye on that. That is an area that unfortunately is not as high as I thought it would be once the border was fully open. So, and there are transfers coming in from REIT to help fund the street fund. In fact, I've had to increase those transfers because when we first went through all this, street fund had a $159,000 negative ending fund balance, but I've fixed that by increasing some transfers from REIT, and we had to make some expense reductions, including a new truck that we were anticipating. And at this point, unless council says put it back in, I've taken out the six radar signs. If you want them in, we can leave them in. That's $50,000. But that was an idea to help balance this because it's negative at this point.
Are you talking about the speed indicator?
The six radar is $50,000, and then the new truck was $85,000. So once Gary comes up, we can talk more about the expenses. But that is what I'm proposing we get rid of and then increase a transfer from REIT, which will help balance out the negative $159,000 and make it $1 positive. So at least it's on the positive side. And Gary will talk about the rest of these expenses. Electric fund is doing great. It's the one fund that typically does fine. It's absolutely paying for itself. So I didn't see any issues there with revenues. However, like I was saying, we should increase it by 8%, so we're at least keeping track with inflation. Water fund, this is one that is struggling a bit. At first, when we went through this, it was negative, but we were able to fix it, and now it's got about a $200,000 positive fund balance, so that's good. However, we had to do that by reducing some of the transfers out that we typically put to capital. That's not, you don't want to keep doing that, but like I was saying, for the next few years, we could face a bit of a struggling economy, so I've taken that out for now to make sure we can balance that fund and have it positive.
But aren't we in a situation where we were about to not have enough water for the city because we needed to make sure that have some new extraction equipment, getting more water out of the ground and stuff that?
So we're still planning on doing that, yes.
Okay, so that's not the part you took out of the budget?
Oh, no, no. Okay. The piece that I just took out was putting, one of the pieces was to put in extra money into capital, so increasing the savings. But we do have savings to pay for these projects.
Oh, you mean like a savings for capital, not specific capital expenditures?
Correct, like for future years. Now, we don't want to keep doing that, though. In general, we should be saving money every single year and putting it into capital. And at this point, we're projecting in water fund, $196,000 positive ending net position, so that's good. I mean, we should be higher, but it's good for now. Wastewater fund budget, we had a very slight drop overall in operating revenue. Last year is 5.6 million in the budget, this year 5.4 million. A lot of that though is because of a one-time transfer in that we had before from a reserve account for equipment replacement with USDA. So we're not doing that in 2023. But that was expected. So it did drop the operating revenue slightly. However, their ending net position is 407,000. That's pretty good. That's almost right at what the target is at 500,000. Surface and stormwater, the operating revenues increased slightly. Overall, this fund is doing fine. Public Works admin budget, operating revenues also increased slightly, but this is one of those funds where it's an internal service fund, so we don't maintain a large ending fund balance. Ideally, we spend it all because we're spending it on services for the rest of the city. So typically it ends on either a zero fund balance or possibly 100,000 at the most. Any question on the revenue? So I'm going to pass it over to Gary and he can go over the expenses. So just keep in mind the two areas we need to keep an eye on are street and water fund. They're going to be fine for 2023, but we do need to keep an eye on those to make sure they stay healthy.
Good afternoon, council members. So, like Dan said on the street funds, we did nothing super crazy on this. We made a slight bump, you know, like he's mentioned, to cover inflation across the board. And this is the fund also that for our five seasonal employees that we utilize come from. So they are still in there. So basically we hoped, you know, from what you saw this year, you know, we don't ever want to go back from that. So we've got funds in there to hopefully take it to another level, not where we would like to go, but take another step forward. And that's what we plan to do this next year.
So I have a question with the five seasonal employees. What's their job roles?
So they're leveraged, you know, once training is involved, you know, for like flagging, they can do that. You know, we utilize them for, you know, doing some painting around town, on some of the assets around town, things of that nature.
Like maintenance stuff around?
Yep. Light maintenance, nothing involved that handles a lot of, you know, hugely technical, you know, jobs. But yeah.
That's not the summer mowing and landscaping guys?
So they help with some of the parklets, the weed eating, you know, the areas that are covered by the streets, downtown proper. They do, we do utilize them for that. Yeah, for sure.
So as far as flagging and that kind of stuff, if they're flagging for one of the enterprise funds, is there a transfer of their time from enterprise funds to the street?
Typically, fund? Most of the flagging they do is for the streets when we're doing like street works. If we do have, if we are brushing out on the road somewhere, we got to have traffic control. Mm-hmm. They would help leverage that. Patching, things to that nature. If they do go outside of street, their time would be tracked and it would be appropriately distributed.
And what's the cost of those five employees per year approximately?
You have that off the top of your head, David?
For the five street?
So for the seasonals, for the five employees, it typically runs us anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 per year per position, employee. Per employee. Yeah.
So $50,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they only work for 4 months. So it's about anywhere around $7,500 per person per year.
Okay.
To do a seasonal.
4 months. So they're working like totally part-time then?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if we're only giving them about $1,500 to $2,000 a month or whatever, then that's...
Yeah, the most expensive, the biggest one I've seen on these seasonals is about $3,000 for the month. But again, they only work for like 4 months.
Why is it we have six people working half-time rather than three people working full-time to get those tasks done?
That I don't know. That would be up to Public Works on why they're doing five seasonals. They might have one of them full time in a month, and then another month not as much. But that what I've seen is they're anywhere around $7,000 to $10,000 a year is what they cost us. But they're only here, like I said, for 3 or 4 months.
And do you find that it's the same employees coming back year after year, or is there?
This year it was a couple repeats, but I think most of them were new. I think it was a little bit more of a challenge this year to find the seasonals.
And sorry, in terms of looking at the budget, are they kind of filtered in with roadways, sidewalks, special purpose paths, street lighting, street traffic control under salaries and wages?
Yeah, they have a slight charge to each one of those areas. Yeah. But most of their charge is to streets, roadway.
Would there be anything efficient about having, you know, three full times rather than five part times? You mentioned some retention things that some came back and some didn't. Would people be more eager to take those jobs if it was a full time job? Do you guys know?
Well, it would. You know, like last year, you know, when I stepped, you know, of course the budget was set. You know, and we were told we could have five seasonals to help out. You know, so we took what we could get. For sure. You know, when you do look at the full-time, the FTEs, you know, where you get into a lot of costs is with the packages that comes behind the wage. That's where it gets expensive. And unfortunately, the street fund, excuse me, is a fund that's always been kind of tight for funds. So there hasn't been a lot of room in there for full-time employees.
Even on benefited positions, right?
Correct.
Now, that's probably why they're being kept below certain amounts, because once you get the benefits in, it starts adding up quickly.
Okay.
And then again, looking to, you know, ample funds to do the flower baskets again this year as well. On the electric fund, in the recent months, we've got one new full-time journeyman in-house. So that gives us two journeymen at this time, and we have one groundsman, which is a new position as well. So we've got basically one full crew. We have another commitment letter from a gentleman from Kansas. He's a journeyman lineman. However, they're having a little bit of sticker shock with moving from Kansas to Washington. So they're trying to work all that out. And then we did talk to another local lineman today. So that's looking, you know, looking good. So we still are looking to put a couple more linemen in place. And then that would virtually complete our build out. You know, so two more linemen and one groundsman, and then we'd have two full crews and basically have a full functioning electrical department. Will not only allow us to do, you know, the day-to-day around the town, but it will also allow us to start doing preemptive maintenance work and doing more projects ourselves and doing more in-house. So that's the anticipation there. And then one big thing we want to get done next year, and it's in the budget, is to do a revise our power comprehensive plan. So that's going to be a big one for us. And then as far as a expense, we need a new wire trailer, a hydraulic one that prevent, you know, you don't have to, you know, use the forklift. They're a lot nicer, safer, more efficient tool. So we put in for the line trailer as well. I mean, then this budget, with the projected forecast we have now, we'll be coming in at below budget at the 22 budget. So, and that's basically the same for all of these. We're going to make the numbers that we projected last year in the 22 budget.
Curious, does next year's budget include emergency support from the town hall?
So we are setting up an emergency contract with the telco. However, if we staff the way that we intend on staffing, that should be it would take something really big to utilize that. Because we'll be staffed. Once we make the hires, you know, we'll be able to do some pole work. We have all the equipment to do that. So, but there will be, you know, for worst case scenario, Patelka will be on a phone call away, able to come out and respond and help us.
This is into the weeds a little bit, but under the power comprehensive plan for 2023, does that include the poles? Because I know that we've got poles that are,
So it's going to look at everything.
Oh.
And there's been a lot of pre-work done. I've done some snooping around, and I found a firm that did a bunch of work, you know, studying our electrical grid. So a lot of work's done. So, but yeah, we'll be looking at everything.
Great. Did we talk about replacing poles?
Yeah.
Because over in Europe, where they've kind of cut down all the trees hundreds of years ago, they use cement poles. And I don't know if there's an advantage to that with the climate and how quickly our poles run out, but it'd be interesting to see if there's alternate things that the poles can be made of, if we're subbing them out anyway.
So we've been looking, you know, anytime we can, you know, our motto is we try to get it underground. So if we have to do a whole section of poles, we would look at putting it underground and getting the poles out of the grid.
Well, that's better too.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the work that's already been done, how old is that work?
So it was done in 2000, I believe it was. 2020. It was basically a draft comp plan that was done. It was never brought out a draft. So basically the work that we're going to do is going to be vetting that comp plan, you know, making sure everything still makes sense and it jives, and then make sure that it, you know, takes a look at, you know, the growth projections that we have, and basically just tie all the dots together.
Is it possible to get a copy of that?
Yeah, sure.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Any more questions on power? Water fund. So one area we're looking to increase is the professional services. What we want to do is, so say like when grants come up and come available to us, you know, it's nice to have some shovel ready projects. So if a grant comes up and we've got a project that's ready to go, or we just give them, you know, a 30%, you know, package, it's much easier to get that funding. So we haven't done a good job on that in the past. You know, we're looking to do that with this, build some projects, get them ready to go. And then when funding comes available, that will give us an opportunity to go after that and secure some of that. We are looking for, in the water department, one new full-time employee. That's going to be a water quality specialist. They will be doing like the sample work on the water system. They'll be, that will basically be their function. In the past,
are we handling that now?
What's that?
How are we doing that now?
So it used to be a shared between the water department and the folks out at the treatment plant, because their water quality, they have the credential needed to do that. So we used to leverage them to help us with to help the water department with performing that function. However, they're getting, you know, they're swamped over there. So we took that back in house, and to do that, we needed a person of this credential to be able to handle the sampling of the water system.
How does that amount to a full FTE? I don't know enough about the type of work that's done. So
basically, they do the samples. They take care of all the regulatory reporting, you know, with ecology that's involved with that. So there's a lot to do. And honestly, it probably needed more attention than what it was seeing being split between the groups, just kind of doing whatever it took to make it happen. So it definitely is a full-time position to do it right. And then also to help craft the documentation behind it, the procedures, the SOPs, you know, that would be part of this person's employee too, to really make it, you know, pass muster amongst any regulatory agency that may come in. And then another position that we're looking to add to is an instrumentation/ electrical technician. And this would be split 50% with the water department and 50% with the wastewater plant.
Who's doing that work now?
So right now it's VECA. You know, they're doing a lot of it, along with QCC does a lot of our programming of our, you know, the PLCs and the operator interface with the system. They design the graphics and whatnot. So this position, like Matt's over at the plant, Beck is out there a lot, you know, doing this very function. And it's expensive. And I don't have the numbers right in front of me. But the water department now, we've got our SCADA system up and running now. So we have, you know, eyes on our system. And we have a lot of field work that needs to be done. There's a lot of calibration, making sure all the, you know, everything is in the proper range, reading correctly. You know, we're doing our, you know, our numbers off the well field every day. So this is a position that could be used, you know, again, a lot at the plant, you know, because they've got a huge SCADA system. And then also with us, and then over at PW. And we are adding more instrumentation you know, on every project we do, like our, the G Street sewer is going to have telemetry on it. So we'll be able to get, you know, we'll be able to see flows coming into the plant through all the different branches and see exactly. So Matt knows what's coming at him before it even gets to this plant. That's our goal with that position.
What's the number of, what's the current number of positions for the water? And then we're going to go to 1.5 more than that. So what's the current number you have?
That I have right now? So I've got three.
Three. So you want to increase your employees by 50%, essentially, in the water department.
Yeah, you'd have the one full-time and then the 50% of another.
Right. So that seems like a big increase. I mean, have we been that short that we need to increase by 50% in the water department?
Well, the specialist, that's kind of a gap that we have that we've not truly been. We need somebody in there riding herd on that system. Mm-hmm. The technical, the regulatory side.
That's the water quality specialist.
Yes. Okay. So basically the way it works is we have one maintenance worker. That does the pretty much the day-to-day, mm-hmm. you know, leaks and whatnot. We have one meter person that basically that's their goal in the during the days, mm-hmm. is the meters, the meter calibrations, all of that good stuff. And then we also have one just maintenance worker as okay. well.
Well, what were we doing before for the water quality specialist then?
So the water quality, so basically 50% of that was being handled by the plant, the wastewater operators. Mm. Oh, they had the credential needed to get that task accomplished, according to Department of Ecology. So basically that would be all taken back into the water, so that 50% of the wastewater was performing those tasks would be brought back into water.
And you don't feel like it would be more efficient to have a 50% water quality in the water and 50% water quality, you know, like a half FT in the water quality, half FT in the wastewater?
At this time, no, because basically the wastewater, they were just, you know, it wasn't in their wheelhouse. They were performing it because of the credential that they had. So they were helping out. You know, they run their own lab and they run a whole gauntlet of of testing on their side. This would just allow us to kind of segregate both units.
Right.
And it would allow water to take that in and actually develop the program as it should be and build it out the way it should be.
Are you talking about hiring one person that would handle both the water and the wastewater tech stuff?
No, the new instrument, the instrument or the water quality specialist would be strictly on the water.
Oh, okay.
Yep, strictly on water. Yeah, the instrument electrician tech would be split between them.
But that person would spend some of their time doing the one, yes. some of their time doing the other.
Yes.
And I hate to be so nitpicky, but you know, we're raising the rate 17.5%. And we've been doing this with three people for however long. If we're not doing as well as we should, then we should definitely hire people. But I just want to make sure that it's justified when I get stopped walking my dog in the street and people yell at me about the 17%. I want to say, well, we need a water quality guy. So to increase your business doing anything by 50%, that's a big deal.
So it is.
I just want to make sure we're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and you know, I feel that it would be very helpful. You know, it'd be very beneficial to our program, and it would let us build it out to where, you know, like I say, it would pass muster with any regulatory agency that may come in and audit us. And then on the water, the only thing vehicle-wise that we have there is we propose to buy a service body. We have a pickup truck that's a good truck, and we would like to buy a service body for it to make it more efficient to be used as a service vehicle.
What would the cost of that be roughly?
I believe it was like 26,000.
Just for the service body, right?
For the service body.
That's one time, and how long would that last us?
Well, that lasts for years. Yeah, years.
Is there no refurbished version of that?
I honestly haven't looked into that, the refurb beds. Something I can do.
Yeah, I mean, if we can get one for, you know, $9,000 from some city who's upgrading or whatever, and, you know, like we got all that stuff in a bunch of stuff in the skate park because the Carnation Washington just were done with their skate park equipment, put in a new one, and they basically said, if you can show up with the truck, it's yours. Sometimes that kind of stuff can happen. And times are really tight now, so if any chance you can do something like that, it would be great to have as an option.
I can check some government sites and see what I can find.
Okay. And we're going with 2 new FTEs for wastewater. How many employees do we have there now?
So basically, excuse me, on the wastewater fund, so we have three, we only have 3 full-time employees at the plant. And that is basically, that's kind of where our power department was about a year ago. That's that critical mass. So basically, if we lose one of those employees, we're in a bad way. And then, you know, 2 employees and you're unable to function. So we're looking to add 2 FTEs to the group. And we're looking for Tech 3s is what we're shooting for, if we can find them. I know that's not always an easy position to fill, but that's our intention. And if we have to drop, you know, down into the tech 2s or even 1s, if we can get at least a wastewater operator 1, at least they have basically the credentials they need to start the process, and we can work with that. So we're shooting for 3s. If we have to go down from that to fill the ranks, we would do that.
If you hire 1, they can get certifications while they're working for us and work their way up?
Yes. Yeah.
Was there somebody that retired in the wastewater department sometime in the last 3-4 years that we didn't replace? Something like that?
Yeah. It sounds like there was.
Yeah.
So part of this is to get us partway back to historical levels.
Because that was one of those cost-setting things we did during the pandemic, was not replacing people that happened to walk away.
Yeah.
We just left the positions open. And I thought that was the case with wastewater.
Yeah, so that would staff us up at a proper level so that we got a little bit of redundancy. And, it, you know, our folks are on call pretty much, you know, a big portion of the time. So this would, again, also help the work-life balance as well. Those folks out there work a lot. So the plants, we don't have, this year we did a lot of the major turnarounds that we had, a lot of the major maintenance. So we don't have anything major planned for the facility next year. And on the sewer front, we did add a potential for 1 new service vehicle truck. And the wastewater fund too is projected to come out below the O&M budget of the 22 budget. So we're coming in below the 22 numbers. Questions on the wastewater? Surface and storm. So that's another one where we are gonna do the update the comprehensive plan on this. This is one that's sorely needed. This is going to identify all the outfalls that go to the harbor, that's going to look at everything across the city, everything and everything storm. This one, it's been a while since this has been updated. So this is going to be a pretty major lift. This is going to require us to do a lot of field verifications, documenting structures in place, a lot of work. But this one's very much needed. And this is going to help guide us in the future development and then everything we do, in and around the bays, knowing all that good stuff like we chatted about.
Yeah, you're still planning on kicking that off Q1 2023?
Yep. Okay. Yep. And this is going to take some time. So this would probably take us potentially a good part of the year to get this completed, just with the sheer amount of work that has to happen. But yes, definitely we want to get this rolling and get it out to bid as soon as possible so we can get action on this. And this, again, too, we increased professional services so we can put together some needed projects that we know need to happen. So again, if funding comes available, we have something ready to throw right in front of them and hopefully get in the front of the line on any funds that might pop up. So we're looking to do that pretty much across the board of public works. And then we will be, it's not a new, but we will be backfilling a position. Right now, we only have one employee in the storm system. Our second got promoted to the new groundsman. We have an electrical department, so we would like to backfill that to make that division whole. Any questions on the storm system?
I'll make a comment that I think this wastewater or stormwater comprehensive plan today is a 2005. It's an old
yeah, oh, yeah.
plan.
Yeah.
So it definitely needs to be updated.
Yeah, and even the 2005 might be generous. The admin budget. So this is another one where we were, we were increasing a slight increase in professional services. This is going to, for instance, surveying, any surveying that we need to do for not only the comp plans, but for like our GIS, updating our mapping systems and whatnot. That's going to be a big one there, having the funds to do that. And we've also, in the admin department, added three new FTEs. So basically right now, the way we're structured, we have two civil engineers, for doing everything from some light design work for the group, and then a lot of design review for the development that's going on. What we've proposed is a Tech 3 to work with each of our engineers. So basically it would give us an engineer team. It would give us two teams. It would give us, two civils and two tech threes. And they would be able to more efficiently get through the design reviews and the projects that we're all, mired down in now and get it, the idea would be to get a quicker turnaround for that and get those designs done and out the door in a timely manner. The Tech 1 that we proposed, the purpose of that one will be is we're looking to go into the GIS mapping system to redo our old map systems. They need to be field verified. They need to be uploaded into the database. And we're talking all the way across the board, water, sewer, power, storm, the whole gamut. And that Tech 1 would be working with our current Tech 3 that we have now that's in charge of GIS. So basically it would be a two-person team tackling our all of our GIS woes in the field so we can have accurate maps visible to all. That'd be the purpose of that. And that kind of is the ask we're looking for there. And we are asking for one more position as well, and it's a procurement specialist. as somebody that would basically, you know, take care of procurement, putting together POs. They would be in charge of inventories, inventory tracking, a whole gamut of things that we don't have in-house right now. We've been, the way it works right now is you know, it's myself and Manroop. We just kind of, you know, and then the foreman downstairs, we all just kind of do what it takes to get it done. However, it's not super efficient and it takes a lot of our time to do that. So a procurement person would streamline that process and be able to ride herd on that process. And then not only that, but, you know, get things stable and then in the background, start working on the procedures, you know, behind it. We need to do a lot of work on procedures, SOPs behind the scenes. And that's going to be one of our tasks next week or next year, including myself, on getting movement on that, getting more efficient.
So these three plus the two more, the five that you're looking at, do you feel like what percentage of their work is done purely for the enterprise fund?
So basically the techs, the tech threes, they would, a big portion of their job would be project review. That would be pretty much their life, project review. The tech one would be solely GIS, and that would be a split between all the groups. That would be power, that'd be all of them, mm-hmm. you know, and that would probably split up in a pretty equal, you know, in equal slice. So yeah, that would be the anticipation behind those positions.
Okay, great.
Dan might have the answer on this off the top of your head here. How many employees does the city have? Is something like 60 or 70 people or something?
Approximately, it's right around 60 currently.
Around 60? And in this the documents we've looked at today, there's like eight new positions?
It was five total. Was that what it was? Five FTEs?
Oh, no, there's like five on that page, and then there's two or three on another page. And I'm just trying to look at how what thing of a
what got six and five. So,
I see tab.
Yeah, that's what was
an electric
50-50.
Yeah, so that was looking to me like going from like 60 people working in the city for up to 70 people working in the city. I'm sure these are much needed. I'm sure every single one of these is desperately needed. I just wanted to say out loud that we're looking at a request that would take us from 60 employees up to 70 employees for the citywide.
I don't think it was it 10? Wasn't it like seven? Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So, and again, this first round, we were going to do the same thing with general fund, where we come with this first round is a total wish list. So
oh, sure.
I mean, we'll absolutely help the city grow, whether we completely fall apart without it
okay.
or not, because we've been functioning without it. But as we grow, and that, want to go to the last slide? Might as well talk about that now. So the last slide, very last. So just in summarizing, what we're planning for is the big growth that's coming here. We all know it's going to show up. It's not going to show up in the next year or two, but it will show up eventually. It's going to be here.
And it'll pay for itself with right. property tax and fees. And
yeah, you know. And enterprise funds, for the most part, do pay for themselves by raising rates, by the and then the Public Works Admin Fund, it's charged out to all the other funds in the city. So these funds do pay for themselves. And the projections that we have in here in the numbers include these extra positions, and they're all balanced. Without them, we just have extra money that we could put to capital or the ending fund balance would increase. So the funds, current, every single fund that we project, that we presented are all balanced. They're not, some of them are not hitting their ending fund balance goal, but they're balanced. So the goal being that we want to have a little extra in there. Street fund isn't. It's only, we're planning for it to have about a dollar extra. And then water is another one that's only going to have about 200,000 extra. However, they are positive. So also in summary, we're planning like a big growth. We need the operational capacity and the new staff to be able to hit this growth in the next few years.
So we have to have people in place before
to start planning
growth that right. will pay for them to
right.
be doing.
We have to start doing these projects of especially building out East Blaine. And then part of this is the rate increases that we're planning in here. So to summarize that, we have 17.5% for water, which was recommended by the consultant last year. And then we have 8% in sewer, surface and storm, and electric. The 8% was not necessarily recommended by the consultant, but like I was saying before, when the consultants did this last fall, inflation wasn't what it is now. So we feel 8% is what we need to just meet inflation, because that's so it's it, we should at least meet inflation in our rate increases. So that's all we have planned for public works. We're gonna do this again November 7th. We'll have general fund. We'll give you the detailed numbers. November 14th, we'll do public works again. These same slides, but we'll have detailed numbers. So you can see all the numbers and the ending fund balance, beginning fund balance. I did look up on the property tax. It appears that we only have like less than $200 of bank capacity. I've got an email in with Whatcom County to verify that. So I'll get back to you for sure on that once I get an answer. But when I'm looking at it, it appears we only have $200 of bank capacity that we could get. That if we wanted to do the bank capacity, we could increase that one slide by another $200. So
okay,
there's
so
not much there,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Understanding bank capacity. I thought that, you know, for example, if there's a statutory limit where you can raise the entire thing
right.
by 1% each year, in a year that you don't raise it by 1%, some other year you can raise
that's
an additional percent.
Yeah, so.
So I don't understand how you have a college figure to talk about.
Well, it just with what I saw was how much they were saying we could go up to versus the max. The max was like $200 than what I presented on that slide. So what it's saying is there must have been some years that we did not bank and we used the 1%. But I will verify that for sure and get back to you on that.
Okay, yeah, I'll verify
yeah.
that. I remember.
So I had a question and I already emailed the county. But so don't completely count. What I'm seeing is it looks like we only have about
$200.
So
that's used the 1% every single year.
That's what it's suggesting, but I need to find that out with the county. So any other questions for us before we move on to...
I think I need some clarification on something that was said earlier, and I don't know if it just kind of went by me and everybody else, but it sounded to me like what I heard was that part of the rate increases is going to potentially pay for FTE that is going to help fund development in East Blaine. And so that existing taxpayers are going to be footing the bill to pay for the services that future citizens are going to be receiving. And they're going to be paying for that infrastructure. Is that, in a nutshell, what I heard?
I think that somewhat that is a bit of a fair assessment that yes, current taxpayers are paying for future development. And that's the catch 22 on that is as people move into the area, it does increase the prices of everyone's homes.
Right.
So there is some benefit to that of developing the city for future people to show up.
Well,
but,
there's
yes, some of the current base would pay for some of that.
And there's some areas, like, for example, the sewer, it needs to be done regardless
right.
of whether or not we're doing East Plain or not.
Yes, even if we did not do East Plain, we have that sewer is a big issue right now. We have to fix that. That is that regardless of East Plain, that has to be done. The new development that we're going to be doing in East Plain is stuff that we're in process now and doing in the future, which will help build out that area. But yeah, some of that will be paid for by property taxes going up on everyone. But that's for the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, rate increases. I was thinking property tax. The rate increases going up, yes. There are everyone's rates will go up, which will help pay the current system and also East Blaine. So a lot of those rate increases are because there were years where we didn't do a rate increase. That had nothing to do with East Blaine at all.
That's helpful.
Right.
Thank you.
So there's 6 years where we did zero rate increase on water. So some of that is catch up currently that we'd have to do anyways. But also some of the analysis is the future building out there. Any other questions?
So I had a couple of questions. Actually, they're more like comments with probably some questions thrown in. So what I'm seeing is, and I don't know where you guys got five or whatever it was, but I counted 10 new employees here. Because I counted 3 new in electrical, 1.5 new in water, that's 4.5. 2.5 new in wastewater, so that's what, 7. And then 3 new in public works admin, so that's 10. And I'm assuming that public works probably has 40 employees of the 60. It's just kind of a guess.
No.
Okay, what is it?
It's probably a little over half.
Okay, 30?
It's around 30.
So that's a 33% increase in public works, which is a lot to me. And if some of that is toward future development, and I don't know where Katrina's leaning on this, but I kind of feel like she doesn't want people today to pay for stuff for tomorrow.
Well, I think some of it's inevitable, but
absolutely.
We have to answer those questions.
Right.
People are upset that their rates are going up for a benefit that they're not going to be receiving
right.
themselves.
Right.
Right?
And if the answer is we wait to hire some of these people and we can only grow 150 houses a year as opposed to 300, then that maybe is a decision we have to talk about. You know, I don't think we should just rubber stamp 10 new employees. And I don't think we should rubber stamp 8% necessarily because that's inflation. Now, before I came on the council, they were rubber stamping 0%. That got us in the situation we were in. So at some point, even before I got on the council, I said, we need to do this inflation plus 1%. We did that for several years and have a little bit of a cushion. I'm not saying 8% is wrong because it is inflation, but I don't want to just rubber stamp 8% if 4% is more appropriate. So I just, this is mostly to you guys, but also to you guys.
Yeah.
So I just want to be adamant about, like, just because this is coming forward, that we don't necessarily have to do this. Because this, you're right, everybody will ask us about, why do you have 10 more employees and why are my rates up 10 to 15% total? So.
Yeah, just one point. The 3 new FTEs in electric, we desperately need them.
Oh, absolutely. We absolutely need them in electric. And I totally stand behind you on that. Yeah.
So that's like, if we have a blackout.
Absolutely.
So on this rate,
not electric, that's still 7 more employees, yeah. Which is still a significant increase, 25% or so.
On those rate increases, even without these new employees in here, we're still recommending those exact same rate increases. So as these new employees go in, then probably in a few more years, we'll have to do more rate increases.
Well, then we'll need to see those numbers as opposed to just seeing like we're going to meet budget and then we're going to hire.
I know those employees are in. So the rate increase, the 17.5%, that is what the consultant said last year. That had nothing to do with new employees that are going in.
Oh, no, absolutely. I absolutely know that.
And the other ones are just to keep up with inflation.
Yeah.
So because all the costs in every single one of these funds have gone up with inflation.
I know, so, and we're going to have to see the numbers because there are no numbers in this other than
FUFE. Yeah, you know, at this point, it's just qualitative. We'll definitely get to the numbers. And also, you know, we'll do exactly what council wants.
Right.
So all we do is come to with recommendations to you, but we'll absolutely do exactly what you want and what the citizens want. So it's your will, not our will. We come with recommendations.
We will be interested in the distinction between knowing there's a plane in the sky that's going to land and trying to build the runway before it lands, or not building it until we know there's a plane in the sky that's on the way. So it's like in some of these, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Our budget is so compromised right now that wherever possible, we want to see if we can kind of add things in the nick of time as we need them, as opposed to which of these things must be put in place and be up into full gear so that we've rolled out the red carpet for something to arrive and we're already. Some of these things have to go ahead. Can some of them not? Those are some of the questions that we may be interested in hearing.
Yeah, and those are very good questions because, yeah, exactly. We don't want to have 10 planes in the sky and we can't land them because
yep.
We don't have the staff that is building out things.
I think it's a hard time to talk about rate increases, to be honest. I mean, significant rate increases. You know, I think for me, I'm going to have to really think hard about what the number, when we get into the numbers, what are those numbers and what are we asking our neighbors and constituents to bear, because everything is so expensive right now. And asking people who are struggling to pay their, you know, their medical bills versus their groceries. And then here we come and we're adding, you know, additional costs to people's lives. I think that that's, it's a significant consideration.
Yeah. And something we're going to be asked, and I mean, I'll ask it as well, is what have we done to cut costs, reduce costs, get more efficient? You know, what have some ideas that have been thrown around? I can't see you guys. Not 100% sure what's been done to, you know, cost-saving measures and best practices. So I'd be interested in finding out a lot of those.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that from my standpoint, I'm looking at these costs like a hawk. I mean, when I see people ordering things on their credit cards that I think just looks kind of frivolous, I'll absolutely question it because that's just what I do. That's kind of my nature. I've always felt from my standpoint that this is not our money. It's the taxpayers' money. So it's the citizens' money. We need to be very conscientious of how we spend this.
So Eric, do you have a final thought before we move into the next section? Well, just kind of something I would like to look at. I don't want to look at it during this budget cycle because it'd be too much to deal with. But if we're worried about the people who have the hardest time paying, right? If my sewer bill goes up 8%, I'm going to not be happy, but I'm going to pay it. But for the people who are least apt to pay, least, you know, the people who are struggling the most, I think it'd be nice if City of Blaine could look at some sort of structure in place for those folks to give them a break on their utility bills. That'll have nothing to do with this budgeting. That's a kind of a longer term process to talk about. That's all I have.
You got the questions?
Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to transition into checking the. Got some vacancies on the BTAC, our tourism board, and my understanding is we have as many as three applicants. Is this one of the applicants here, this gentleman here?
Yes.
Okay. Great, so unless there's any other procedure on that, let's, sir, can you come and approach the podium and let's meet you and can you tell us who you are?
Yeah, hi, good evening. My name is Ray Maxson. Been a resident of Blaine for 29 years, so I've been here for a little while to watch some of the transitions occur, closing the airways so the planes can't land, different things that have gone on. Was on the Chamber of Commerce for 5 years and president for two. And that's part of the reason that I guess I'm here tonight to talk about possibly being a board member is that we watched a transition occur in the Chamber of Commerce, moving with Carol Solomon being involved for so many years and doing an excellent job, that the Chamber had become sort of a catch-all for a lot of things happening within the community. In other words, the Discovery Days and the July 4th and Oktoberfest and whatever we did sort of came under the scope of the Chamber of Commerce or the people that were involved in the Chamber. And I think that the BTAC needs to be assisting and get a little bit more involved in the community, seeking volunteers to hopefully pursue additional activities to increase tourism within our city. There's still a lot of things that are on the two reports that were done. Can't remember the gentleman now, but he's out of down the road by Anacortes. But in those reports, both of them had stated, rightly or wrongly, that the city should be looking to have as many as 150 or 200 events a year, which I think personally is kind of a little ambitious. But they didn't necessarily say they had to be big events, but just things to get the community and other people involved come in. And so that's sort of my main reason for being here is that I think that I have something to provide and assist in the knowledge that I learned in the time that I was involved there with Carol and other board members.
Excellent. You may be familiar that the city is authorized to apply a lodging tax and use that revenue to support programs to increase tourism. That's set forth under state law. It happens to be RCW 67.28.1816.
Are you familiar with that law, and how would you apply those provisions when considering grant requests to BTAC people wanting to use those locally here?
Well, I think generally the BTAC funds are meant for nonprofits. Not that there aren't other provisions that can be made, with some exception, I believe, but I think the RCW pretty much lays it out pretty explicitly with that you have to file a grant. There has to be logic behind the grant. You have to explain how you're going to spend the funding. And so I think under the scope of the guidelines of the RCW, I'm familiar with it more than enough to see that the rules are followed appropriately.
Very good. And you mentioned some of our, our little festivals and temporary things to draw people. Between those and other things, what do you think the city's current greatest draws are for tourists year round, as well as those specialty things?
Well, I think we know what's drawing people currently. Obviously, the July 4th is probably our biggest event, with somewhere in the 12,000 to 15,000 range of people attending that day. The recent Oyster Festival that they had, which I think first idea came up 4 or 5 years ago, it took that long for that to come to fruition, was, I think, a very relative success. We've got Discovery Days. We've got a lot of different events where they're bringing back the steam engine boats into the harbor, and I think the tall ships are coming back, which draws people from Canada as well as Bellingham. So I think those are we know what we've done well. Now we have to talk about what else do we need to do.
And what would you suggest is going to make sure people come all the time, not just when we have something special going on?
Well, I think we need to continue to promote the fact that we're on the ocean. We are a port city in effect.
Would you support changing the name of the town to Blaine Harbor, Washington?
No. That's not something I'd want to get involved in. No, it's being Blaine, and I think everybody that's been born and raised here knows that it's Blaine. They came up with the theme that we're on the Salish Sea or whatever. I think we could incorporate more boating type stuff to make people more aware of where we are located. We could have a crab festival, which we haven't done. I think we have some crab bakes and whatnot, or have over the years supporting baseball and other sports teams in the community. But we could have everything from, we've got 800 feet of transient moorage in the marina. Maybe we should have a welcome package for those people that's given out when they sign up for their slip, that shows a map of Blaine, and they can buy groceries at the Chevron. They can get ice cream. They can get food. Even talking to the Inn at Semiahmoo and having that package given out to in the 200 rooms that they have, maybe we can help draw people away from Semiahmoo. We're not going to take money from them, but we should try to get those people from Semiahmoo across over here to spend money. And I don't see us doing that, or I have not seen us doing that type of thing in the past. I had a list. When I first joined the chamber 5, 6, 7 years ago now, I wrote down, I went down every city on the coast from San Diego up to Blaine. And I listed about 30 different events that occurred in different cities up and down the coast. And I said, these are all things that could be considered. Everything from a sailing regatta or race sailing, to square dancing, to a chili cook-off, to a barbecue cook-off. I mean, there's an endless number of things that can be done, but we've got to get our citizens engaged. We had a meeting many years ago where, I'm going to say it, I think we've got a lot of very good people in our community, but they're quick to complain and yet complacent to come out and spend their own time and energy to help us build things. That's just my experience.
Hey, other members of the council want to talk to our applicant here?
What do you think your 5 years on the chamber, 2 years as president, what were a couple of your biggest accomplishments that you feel most proud of?
Well, I think the thing that was the most important part was that we transitioned finally to have a part-time employee that worked for the chamber, that did as administrative as well as outgoing to bring new business in. So the chamber had gotten away from historic chamber functions, which is supporting business and development and that type of thing. But I think bringing that person on board was probably the most critical path to helping that chamber become more functional to the business community.
Any other questions from other members of council?
Okay, great. And have you looked into the time commitment for this? Is it that can fit your schedule?
The time commitment is rather minimal for this particular position. My intent, though, would be to be a lot more involved. When you take a look at reading through the purpose of an LTAC or BTAC committee, it states that the committee can go out and pursue people in the community to try to develop more activities. And I think we have to get, the BTAC has to become more proactive rather than just looking at the grants that come in. They have to take a look at these potential activities and say, how can we help promote these? How can we take some of that seed money, whether it's 2,000, 4,000, to start new activities? The BTAC has to become more proactive in that, because that was a lot of that was happening within the chamber and it isn't today.
Great. Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good evening.
What? Oh, there we go.
Definitely better. That's better.
Who else have we got there, Sam?
We have number 3.
Well, Sam's got it going. Hello, if you could introduce yourself and tell us why you're interested in serving on BTAC.
Hello, my name is Samantha Davis. I am the revenue manager at the Siama Resort, as well as Hotel Leo, Heliotrope Hotel, and Fairhaven Village Inn. I've been with the Siama Resort for about 10 years now. When I first found out that there was a vacancy on the Blaine Tourism Advisory Committee, I thought it'd be a great opportunity to use my expertise and knowledge to help community and businesses and the community grow.
Great. So you're in a supervisory or management type capacity with the resort?
Correct. The revenue management, so I advise the property on how.
Okay.
So that's right. Just to apply to general.
So you'd have a very much of an interest in how the, because a lot of the funds, a lot of the BTAC funds originate from over there. So you'd be very interested in following through how they go there. Exactly. So can you describe your understanding of the state law, which happens to be RCW 67.28.1816, which authorizes the city to apply the lodging tax that we were just discussing in the and support those programs that increase tourism, and can how would you want to apply those provisions when considering grant requests for the BTAC funds?
My understanding is that allows the city to use those designated funds to promote tourism and issue grants for activities that attract tourism. You know, I'd apply that to promote activities that are more popular nowadays. You know, for example, conventions, fairs, parades.
Yeah, is there any specific things you were looking forward to focusing on helping to have happen?
One of the things I'd like to see happen more is more events at the Peace Arch Park.
Hmm.
I think that's a little bit underutilized, and it's one of the things I think makes Blaine a little bit more unique than other places.
What kind of events at Peace Arch would you be interested in?
That's a good question. I'm not exactly sure quite yet.
Okay, great. And what do you think the city's current greatest draws are who bring tourists and visitors here?
I'm a little biased, but I think it's the Siama Resort. I think it's one of the biggest ones year round. But Blaine does have a lot more to offer. For example, the historic downtown area. Its proximity to the Canadian border makes an ideal place for people to go shopping before they head back home or just as their only destination for shopping. It's also a great place for northbound travelers to stop and relax before they make the trip across the border.
The person who was speaking before you there was talking about a welcome pack going out to people who are mooring here or perhaps staying at the resort. Are you familiar with the great growth we've had in having a dining center here on Peace Portal, and how do you think that fits into encouraging people to come to the area?
I am not familiar with that, unfortunately.
Oh, I see. Okay. Any other questions from other council members?
What would you say is the biggest challenge that you have identified in promoting tourism in the city of Blaine?
In my experience at the resort, it's just getting our name out there. Not a whole lot of people know about us right now. Another challenge is the return of the Canadian business. It's been really slow to recover here.
Any other questions from other council members?
So it says under occupation, you're the revenue manager for Semiyamu Hotel Leo, Teletrope, and the village, Fairhaven Village. And so for four different hotels?
Correct.
All within the same company?
Yes, Columbia Hospitality. I'm based at the Semiyamu Resort, though.
And this is essentially for the hotel motel position, right? Okay.
Correct.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've served on some county boards where they has to have one person in the construction industry, yep, and then yep, one person who's a farmer and one person. So, okay, yeah, some of those requirements that we have as well. And Sam, who we have?
The other candidates seem to be here, yeah. But that interview is supposed to be at 5:45, so it's all about 15 minutes for them to show up. If they show up earlier, great. We'll interview them earlier, but at this point in time, we're running.
Okay.
Good on
time. For some of these, is there a reason to avoid having overlap, like to try and make sure that they're not here in the room at the same time as each other or anything? Because if there isn't, I would recommend. I've been to stuff where all the applicants all sit through the whole meeting and sit through everybody else's interviews, and if they could be staggered to come, like 10 minutes before their scheduled time or something, would probably work out fluidly, just in case we're just going quickly there.
Our best. Yeah. Yes. Sometimes it's hard to get volunteers here. They leave work at 4:00.
Right.
Make time to grow the responsibilities.
Okay. Fair enough.
Just to kind of add to what Samantha's situation is with the hotel and BTAC, there is a committee formed of the Semiyamu Resort, the Semiyamu Resort Association, and the city. That's Alex Wenger's position. And these people meet for the sole purpose of promoting this area as tourism. And there are ads on television. Semiyamu Resort is on Facebook and on ads on television promoting the resort as a destination. And Samantha, I go down to the resort far too often a week to play pickleball, and I noticed the parking lots are quite full this year. So certainly whatever they're doing is working to bring tourism into this area. So that's another key.
Okay, so what would be the better use of our time here is to start back up again it's 5:45 when the person was expecting?
Correct.
Okay, so yeah, so I guess we could take a break till 5:45 and then just have that interview and run it right into our...
I can always just mute the cameras at this point in time and keep recording if you want to. And then let's see, the candidate comes in 5 minutes from now. I can gather the council members and just
decide
right on.
Okay. So we should reconvene the. Are you recording and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to reconvene to interview an additional candidate for the BTAC, and you can come up now and introduce yourself and tell us why you're interested in serving on the BTAC.
I'm lousy with microphones, so tell me if I'm doing okay. My name is Sonia Hurt. I've lived in Blaine for 14 years now, and I'm the kind of person that gets involved. I started out living on my boat at Semiahmoo Marina. I lived on it for 9 years, and then I moved to the Salishan neighborhood. And because I'm that kind of person, I joined the Salishan Neighborhood Association, of which I am now chair. I care deeply about the city I live in. I'm especially concerned about the safety and the economic future of the city. I heard some pretty scary things. They were rumors when I first got here, like people telling prospective business people, oh God, don't come to Blaine, bring your business here and you'll just die. And that kind of got my mind moving in the direction of that we need to do something to ensure that Blaine keeps going in the right direction. As well as the Salishan Neighborhood Association, I'm also a member of the Blaine Chamber of Commerce. I'm on the board of the Wings Over the Water Festival, and I'm also a charter member of the Blaine Arts Council. And you wanted to know now why I want to be a part of BTAC?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been watching the tourism situation in Blaine, like I said, for the 14 years, coming from areas of really high tourism. I lived 20 plus years in Sonora, California, not Sonoma, but Sonora in Tuolumne County, which is near Yosemite. And tourism and government and logging were our main industries. And while I was there, my last position was as the marketing director of the live theater SRT. So I was working in tourism pretty intently at that point. And then when I came to Blaine, I started watching and looking around at the various governmental boards and things and noticed that BTAC had several vacancies and also noticed that meetings were being canceled because they didn't have a quorum. And I've run into that with another organization in Blaine, and I know that that organization died. And so I felt the need to get involved. I thought with my experience and community involvement, I could be of value to BTAC.
Excellent. Can you describe your understanding of the state law that authorizes the city to apply a lodging tax and to get revenue to support programs that increase tourism? How you would apply those provisions when considering the grant requests that come to BTAC to spend those funds?
Certainly. I've read the ordinance, and I understand the state law stipulates that the lodging tax must be used to promote tourism, and that in a city of 5,000 people or more, those proposals for that grant money must be directed to a board other than the city council. And that they must review those and decide how much and which ones they're going to recommend to the city council. And it's my understanding that the city council must then choose from that list. And they may not all get approved. And from what I've heard of the recent meeting of BTAC, there's way more requests for funding than there is money available. So it's going to be a tough time this year to try to decide. And to apply that to the applicants, I would be looking at what's the probability that they're going to significantly increase tourism from outside of our area, and that is going to utilize the businesses in our area. And not only lodging, but all the other tourism and more basic things like our restaurants, our grocery stores. And it used to be that Rite Aid was a big supplier to tourists, but for some reason, corporate decided to eliminate so many of the things that they came and wanted to. You have to look at also how those people who are requesting funds are going about funding what they want to do. Are they just sitting back and sucking at the city's coffers, or are they actively going out and trying to get funds and grants from other areas? And whether or not they've been successful in the past. I mean, I would definitely give some weight to various things that have really proven to be great drivers of tourism and that they've proven to be very successful in the past and worthy of our commitment of funds to them.
Excellent. And what do you think are the city's current best draws for bringing tourists here?
Well, there's one that I don't think gets much thought, and that's that our little seaside community is a very low crime area and does not have visible homeless encampments. People feel safe coming to Blaine and walking around and knowing that they're going to get some relief from all of the mentally ill people that are trying to accost them on the streets and tripping over all the homeless people. And I know for a fact that when I was in California, I went once to San Francisco and was appalled by the defecation that I saw all over, that you had to walk through, and the homeless people everywhere on every corner. It really wasn't a very pleasant experience for me. And coming to Blaine, it is such a treat to be able to walk around unaccosted and in a clean environment. That's my big one. But other than that, we've been really great with our various festivals, our 4th of July parade. The Oyster Fest obviously was a huge success. The Wings Over the Water, the Jazz Festival. Those are big drivers. We've got our parks. We're really fortunate to have some really nice parks. We're also very fortunate and unusual to have two great marinas that are totally underutilized. Having been a yacht owner for over 20 years and organized rendezvous in many different cities throughout Puget Sound, I get to evaluate what they have to offer, what the city has to offer. And we've got some great things here to offer, but we don't get any rendezvous. We don't get many activities at all. I was happy to see that the new tourism plan that was developed really commented on the marinas and what they were going to try to do to drive some marina activity to increase that tourism aspect. We've obviously got the resort, and we're actually starting to get some really interesting restaurants.
Yeah. Are you familiar with our dining amenities being referred to with blanket terms like the G Street dining experience and things like that?
No, I have not heard that.
See, you're the focus group here to see whether or not that would caught on. So, okay.
Yep. I just know from personal experience, I was surprised. I tried to encourage the folks at Peace Arch Cafe to open for dinner. I mean, it would be a great, they could offer a great different kind of menu. And they said, no, there are too many restaurants in Blaine to compete with us. And I was shocked. So I went back to the little brochure and looked at all the restaurants and I went, I don't think so. I think there's definitely more room for different kinds of restaurants. And that would definitely draw more people.
Have you looked at the Blaine by the Sea website?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's on track?
I think so. It's getting there.
Are there other council members on?
What do you think a couple of your biggest accomplishments, your personal accomplishments from when you were on Chamber of Commerce are that you're most proud of?
With the Chamber?
Yeah.
The only thing that I've actually had an opportunity to be involved in was the late arts tour, the studio tour.
The one recently?
That's the one recently, yeah. I joined the Chamber, I don't even think it was a year ago. And I've been to several of the luncheons and gotten to know some people. And mostly my accomplishments have been with the Salishan neighborhood and with the Wings Over the Water.
Yeah, if you were to have, let's say, unlimited budget, pie in the sky, what ideas would you have to ramp up tourism?
Like I said, I would really start promoting those marinas, especially the Blaine Marina. I know that Semiahmoo, they're pretty much filled up during the summer with just people that want to spend a weekend or maybe a week. But I think the Blaine Marina has a lot of potential. And like I said, trying to really encourage restaurants. We need, for Blaine to really succeed, we've got to have that mass. We've got to have that critical mass in place to bring people. One thing's not going to do it. They need the lodging, they need the food, they need the entertainment, they need good transportation, that kind of thing. And those would be the things that I work on to ensure that things are here for them. And we certainly would put an end to the silliness about bring your business to Blaine and die.
I believe it was Blaine, the place where dreams go to die. I believe that was
is that how it was?
That was the former slogan.
That was not a good thing to hear when I first
heard. No. But everything's just peachy now, isn't it?
Not quite. My favorite store moved. Because she felt that she just couldn't make it here, and people told her that she was in the wrong place. She was in the outlet mall and didn't belong there. And so she moved to Bellingham. Yeah.
Okay.
So we still need to work on that shopping center.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. And another gentleman who had stepped forward for the BTAC earlier before you got here was talking about giving a welcome package to everybody who came in for temporary mooring, inviting them to do various things around the town.
Almost every other marina does.
Yeah, that sounds like
it. And one of the nicest things that I ever had, I think, was at Bremerton, but not positive. They had a little golf cart that you could take and drive around town to go to the grocery store. That's a biggie for people who go to yacht, to marinas, is they need to find a bakery, a grocery store, and a liquor store.
There we go.
And it's a big hike to go up to the International Shopping Center.
It is. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in, and thank you. Okay, and that concludes the initial work sessions here, and we need a minute. Okay, and we'll recess for 1 minute and then start the main meeting.